When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
She is gone. It's a grand slam. Swung on, hit in the air to right field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. His third home run of the game. A Judgian blast to right field.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Bum, bum, bum. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Nothing to do to
good morning.
Save his life, call his wife in.
Nothing to say, but what a day.
Yeah, what a day. Wake up. Today is the day of record. Today is a big day. We got a lot going on later tonight. We got a couple of game threes. We got the Islanders, we got the Knicks, Philadelphia game three, and we got the NFL draft, and hopefully, as a New York Giant fan here talking to all of you, hopefully this is the beginning of the dawning of a new era. As I heard yesterday, is every single quarterback under the sun is attached to the Giants now. There's even reports that Dan Graziano of ESPN has, they love Michael Penix and would consider him at six. I mean, it's literally every quarterback in the draft. Marco played the clip earlier in the show. Maybe I'll play it again sometime this hour. J.J. McCarthy on with Rich Eisen asked, where are you going? Almost tongue-in-cheek. And he comes back with, well, I've spent the most time with the Giants. I love Dable. I love this. I love that. You got the report yesterday that they're really focused in on trading up to get Drake May. Like, they are connected. They have done such due diligence on all these quarterbacks. I don't believe it to be a smokescreen. I don't think they're messing around. Doesn't mean they will take a quarterback. It doesn't mean they'll put together a better package than, say, Minnesota, or I don't know if Denver's really would consider it, considering the draft picks they're missing because of, you know, trading for a coach and being, you know, trading for a quarterback they've already jettisoned. I don't know if they're in a position to give up all their first-round picks, but hey, there are teams, the Raiders, there are other teams that might put together better packages. The other teams might not want to trade out, might be asking a king's ransom. I don't know what quarterback would still be there at six, so I don't know what the Giants are necessarily going to do, but I do believe that the New York Giants recognize Daniel Jones is not the future. You cannot have faith in Daniel Jones any longer. You cannot wait, as someone tweeted at me just before. Well, you know, sometimes the light comes on. Well, to quote Billy Joel, we've waited too long to turn the lights back on. Daniel Jones, it's been too many years, too many injuries. I can't count on it anymore. It is time to get a quarterback, and I do believe, I don't know if it'll happen, but I do believe the Giants' plan A is to move up and draft a quarterback, or hope, I suppose, that the quarterback they love falls to them at six. I think if you ask Shane and Dable right now, what they hope happens is they have a new quarterback in the fold in 16 hours or so. And I hope that's the case. That's certainly what I'll be rooting for. I think it's what's best for the franchise. I think it's what sets them up for the long stability of winning. They have a perfect situation with the coach and GM who drafted and developed Josh Allen. They have a perfect situation with the quarterback, with Daniel Jones under contract, where they're going to be able to do what they did with Eli Manning. What was referred to as, for a few years, the Kansas City model. Allowing Patrick Mahomes, allowing Eli Manning under winning quarterbacks, under really successful quarterbacks in Kurt Warner, Eli Manning's case, and obviously Alex Smith in the case of Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Having a year to develop, having a year to work with this coach, having a year without the pressure of being thrusted right in with, yeah, probably a bad team with a lot of holes. But having that ability to develop, because a quarterback is, I mean, we've seen it. You can draft a running back and be right. Doesn't impact winning as much as you'd like, as we learned with Saquon Barkley. We can cry all we want that he went to Philadelphia. I don't remember a lot of too much joy with him here, quite honestly. You can be right with an offensive lineman, Andrew Thomas, one of the best left tackles in the sport. Certainly paid like it. Doesn't impact winning. Hell, doesn't impact the offensive line play. You can be right with a lot. And you can be wrong with a lot, too. The quarterback isn't the only crapshoot. You know, we talk about it like, hey, the quarterback's a crapshoot. The last 2 days, we've seen a lot of reports and a lot of statistics. The wide receivers are crapshoots, too. In fact, the biggest crapshoot. More busts in first-round history with the wide receiver position than anywhere else. But yet these three, oh, everyone acts like if the Giants do anything but a quarterback, oh, if they draft a wide receiver, at least you're set up with the great wide receiver. What if he's terrible? What if he's not what you thought? What if he's Crabtree, who was supposed to be the greatest wide receiver of all time and just was like, eh, pretty good, solid? What if he's not the stud who changes your franchise? What if he's not that number one receiver? Is that a lock? Everyone seems to think that's a lock, but the quarterbacks are all crapshoots. Well, look at the stats. Everything's a crapshoot in this draft. Everything. But there's only one position where if you get it right, your whole franchise changes, and the Giants desperately need it. They have a coach who develops quarterbacks. They have a GM who helped draft Josh Allen, a coach who helped develop Josh Allen, an opportunity with the sixth overall pick to get this quarterback. Multiple quarterbacks and a quarterback-heavy draft that you assume they like. They certainly put enough work into them. And a diminished, valued quarterback who's coming off multiple injuries and a perfect situation to not have to play the young kid right away. It's perfect. It's a match made in heaven, and that's what the Giants are hopefully going to do. And the Jets, don't be afraid of that tight end. Don't be afraid to take him. Don't listen to the idea that, well, you know, they're not, you know, the tight ends really aren't, you know, pillars of organizations, and this team needs to make sure that, no, they don't. They need to make sure that Rodgers is successful. That's it. I am hyper-focused on making sure the Jets and this team and this offense work, and that these next 2 years they're competing for a championship. I don't care about 3 years from now. I don't care about what would work with another quarterback if Rodgers goes down. I'm focused on one thing. I went out and got Aaron Rodgers. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback. I have a legitimately good defense, and I have a young weapons that I can add to, and I have an Aaron Rodgers-led team that can win and stop this 13-year drought of not making the playoffs. That's what I'm focused on. I'm not focused on setting up this franchise for stability the way I am with the Giants. It's completely two different elements. And for me, you've addressed the offensive line in the offseason by adding three legitimate linemen. You can always add another. I don't think anybody would be opposed to it because that's still helping Aaron Rodgers. But don't be afraid to take that tight end. Don't point to Pitts and his struggles with a lousy Falcons team and a lousy quarterback situation with Matty Ice at the end of his career and, you know, Mariota. Don't give me, oh, well, listen, you got, you know, Travis Kelce was drafted in the third round. You could find tight ends later on. I could tell you that for every single position on earth. Every position I can point to a third-round draft pick. If you believe he's a stud, like everybody does, if you think he's a dynamic weapon as a tight end that really Aaron Rodgers, as great as he's been, hasn't really had that weapon throughout his career. If you have a red zone target, an excellent pass-catching tight end, and someone else who can add to this dynamic along with Garrett Wilson, along with now Mike Williams, hopefully healthy, along with Breece Hall in this running attack, if you can secure this offense, that's what I'm focused on. And I'm not afraid of any position. I'm not afraid of tight end. I'm not afraid of what it means for the future and what happens if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. Everyone's screwed. That's what happens. If Aaron Rodgers goes down, the Jets are screwed. Why would I prepare for how to less be screwed? I'm preparing for if it works, let's go make it work the best and highest levels it can. If I'm screwed, I'll be screwed. But that's what I'm chasing for the New York Jets. I'm chasing the end of being the laughingstock of not only the division, not only the AFC, not only the NFL, but of all of professional sports. It has to come to an end. And there's only one way to do that. Trust Aaron Rodgers, give him everything, and go out there and freaking win. So I'm not worried about tight ends. Go out there and get the playmaker. Get the quarterback, get the tight end, get a Nick victory, and we'll call it a Thursday night. That's what I say. 877-337-6666. Let's get right into it. What the hell, I see him up here. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
Good morning, Chris. You make absolutely no sense.
Yes, I love it. Okay, sure.
You brag about Daboll and Shane, how they, you know, developed Josh Allen, mm-hmm. right? So you don't know what they're thinking right now. What is right now? You talked to Daboll, and he said, no, I believe I can develop Daniel Jones. Would you change your opinion? Because remember this,
yes,
when he took over Daniel Jones,
mm-hmm.
he went from like 20-something, you know, turnovers. Remember fumbling the ball, throwing picks, to like 5 or 6, which you downplayed.
Yes.
But he did do that. He worked on that.
Yeah.
Obviously, he has to work on him reading the defense and things like that. Mm-hmm. But would you change your whole opinion?
Yes, I would change my opinion on Dable and Shane if they felt you could trust a guy with an injured knee and two injuries to his neck and someone who never stays healthy moving forward. If they believe that could be the future of their organization, then yes, I would change my opinion on how
you
they view things.
You stated the question there, though. You did twist it.
No, I didn't. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure he thinks he can I'm sure I think he thinks he's one hell of a coach and can help the quarterback, and he already helped Daniel Jones. Do I think he thinks he can get the best out of Daniel Jones? Damn right. And do I think he'd be wrong in thinking that? No, he probably could get the best out of Daniel Jones. But what's that? We've seen that. Wow, it gets you a win in Minnesota and then blown out in Philadelphia. Congratulations. It was wonderful. I hope you liked it. What it also gets you is nothing but losing over the last 5 or 6 years.
The
idea that the guy can't stay healthy and his best options are his legs. And you want to know how he turned that turnover machine into a less of a turnover machine? After your first option, if you don't see it, tuck it and run. Congratulations. That got you nothing. It got you nothing, and it will continue to get you nothing.
Your argument is the Eagles. Come on.
Your argument is Minnesota. Your argument's Minnesota.
Because they had no talent. Garbage team.
And what happened? And last year they had garbage team, right? And then who was better? When Tyrod Taylor got into the game, who was better? Who threw the ball down the field? Who made the offense actually look like an offense? Who played better, Tyrod Taylor or Daniel Jones?
Daniel Jones didn't do well last year.
He was awful.
I told you, he needs this one more year, and I'm with you.
Year number six, he needs one more. He needs one more year, six.
They had four offensive linemen. There's no more excuses. Draft the receiver.
There was no more excuses when they drafted Andrew Thomas and Evan Neal. Like, how many more excuses? Like, what?
You think, listen, Chris, I'm going to call you out here. You think the Giants' talent as a team.
Yeah.
Everybody I talked to, they had one of the worst O-lines. They had one of the worst skill sets across the board.
And when Tyrod Taylor came in, they did better.
And
when Tommy DeVito came in and played a Green Bay Packers team that won a playoff game and was hot as hell down the stretch, he showed up in prime time, which, by the way, Daniel Jones is awful in, and went out and beat Green Bay and had the best performance of the season. How come Daniel Jones was incapable of doing it? No, he's not. But he's better. My point is, with the lack of talent and the worst this and the worst that and the worst this and the worst that, yet Tommy DeVito was able to go out and beat a playoff team. And Daniel Jones gets shut out and dominated.
$40 million, Chris.
Yeah.
You're wrong. They owe the guy. Forget all that. Business-wise.
They
owe him $40 million.
And that's why he's going to be the quarterback this year.
Dable and Shane are going to go with this because they didn't really have. They had one season and like 7 games. It's common sense.
Why are they connected to every single quarterback in this draft? Why have they put more work into the quarterback position than any other position? Why, when J.J. McCarthy is asked where you're going, tongue in cheek, he comes back with, "Well, I've met with the Giants the most, and I love Brian Daboll, and we've done this and we've done that." How come there are reports they're looking to trade up to get Drake May? That's echoed by almost everybody in the league, every newsmaker in the league. How come?
Two reasons, Chris.
They have smoke to do screen,
their
right?
Diligence, they have to. And also, I told you this a while ago. I mean, Daniel Jones has gotten hurt. How many starting quarterbacks went out last year? You have to have depth.
They're not drafting one of these quarterbacks to be the depth piece for Daniel Jones over the next 3 years. That's not how it works. You don't take your prime real estate, the biggest ability you have as a franchise to get better, and draft your backup quarterback. You don't do it.
You'll be happy with J.J. McCarthy tonight
if he's not happy. I will dance. I will dance.
Oh, man. Good. You said it. Clip that. Because if they do that and he's dead, I'm calling you back.
Okay, great.
How'd that work out?
Great. Call me back in 3 years.
They don't.
Yeah, including Daniel Jones. So, but hopefully they get better. If they believe in a quarterback, you have to go get him. Plain and simple. Stop making excuses for Daniel Jones. Oh, it was this bad. It was that bad. This is bad. He didn't have this. It's never been that. It's never been this. Oh, he won one game in Minnesota. And I love him for it. It was a great day. And I don't think he's a complete bum. I don't think you can trust him. Right now, his biggest attributes, without question, are his legs. And I'm afraid every time he gets a hit, he's going to hurt his neck. And he blew out his knee. He's hurt every year. Two of the last 3 years ended with season-ending surgery. Enough. It's year six. Enough. How could we still say one more year? We've said it every year for the last 3 years. Oh, he just needs one more. This is the year. And then if he's somewhat good this year, do you think that's proof? How come if he's bad every other year but one, it's not proof we're just waiting for the good year? And then if he has one good year, see, I told you. Like you think you have it won because he had one good season? I give you all the reasons, and you go, "Well, never mind all that. Never mind all that." Well, sure, if you never mind anything, if you don't take anything into account except the 1 year he went to the playoffs, sure. Never mind all that. Okay, never. Is Tommy DeVito the answer? So never mind that. No, it's not relevant that Tommy DeVito took the same slop you're telling me nobody could win with and won. Tommy DeVito went from not being able to throw a pass to taking down Green Bay in prime time and becoming a household name and selling pasta sauce. Brian Daboll did that in a few weeks with Tommy DeVito. What can he do with a young quarterback he loves? What can he do with a young quarterback prospect that he believes in? I'd like to see it, because why hire Brian Daboll if you're not going to give him that chance? Why is he here? To develop Daniel Jones, they tried that. Hurt, losing, taking bad sacks, unable to get the ball down the field. We've seen it. We've seen it. I don't need one more year. I don't need one more year of seasons dead by October. I've seen it. I've been there. I've seen it. Apparently you like it. I don't know what to tell you. You like it. That one Minnesota game wipes out the idea that I'm literally getting my kids into Hulk Hogan and Macho Man costumes and the Giants season's over. But they did win that game in Minnesota. Can't take it away. It drives me nuts, the affinity. And honestly, for Saquon Barkley. Like, we just had a conversation, I know, loosely on pitching wins and you know, I got Marco yelling at me about, it's about the wins, isn't it? It's about the wins, isn't it? Isn't it about winning? I thought it's about winning. It's about winning. And yet the face of this franchise, the two faces of this franchise over the last 6 years, of the worst 6 years in certainly my lifetime, and arguably the last 50 since the 70s of the Giants, with one playoff win mixed in, fine, fair. But of 6 years of being at the bottom of the NFL year after year, having to worry about tonight and where they're going to draft with their top 10 pick, their top 5 pick, their top 2 pick, year after year. Why do we have such an affinity for the two faces of that era? Why are we crying in our cereal about Saquon Barkley going to Philadelphia? And why are we clawing with our fingernails to hang on to Daniel Jones? I respect them. It's not their fault, but they haven't had the ability to help us outgrow being the worst team in the NFL. That's not hyperbole. Nobody loses more than the Giants over the last 6-7 years. Nobody. But we're dying to hang on to it. And, why would we want someone else to come in here and change the era? And why would we want to come in here and bring in a new quarterback? I mean, Daniel Jones is what? I like him. I don't think he's a terrible player. I think he could probably be a starter in this league on some level. But, I mean, listen, if you want to revamp the whole offensive line, if you want to go get 4 or 5 great weapons for him offensively, if you want to build a great defense around him, if you want to make it pitch perfect, then maybe, just maybe, he can win 11 games and take you to the playoffs. Maybe. They're in a position to draft one of the top quarterbacks in this draft. They have Brian Daboll, a guy who can develop quarterbacks. Go do it. You hired the guy to do it. Go do it. Man, oh man, I don't get it. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Hello, Christopher.
Hello. Tonight is your night, tonight, bro. Hopefully tonight is the Giants night, bro.
Yes, tonight is going to be nice. So I don't agree with everything, but let's start with one thing at a time. We need you and Brett for charity to roll around in the mud or something at some point during a Boomer Con event. Something. I mean, just for fun and for S's and giggles.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just, I don't know. I don't understand his affinity for Daniel Jones at such a level.
I don't understand it either. I don't understand it either, but I think you guys, I think you're kind of both wrong, but you're both kind of, I like your points. Everyone has them, right? What I don't understand is I think Daniel Jones is a project that failed. I agree with you. Let's play it out. But I think you're not giving the same two guys the credit. I think these guys are going to pick neighbors, and they're going to do some trade. There's so much value in quarterbacks that they have a gem. I think the quarterback for Florida State is something that they could work on a project. There's so many quarterbacks out there. I think they're going to be wheeling and dealing for some reason. I don't like J.J. McCarthy. I just don't think he's just not my thing. We need more of a mobile quarterback, but I don't think they're going quarterback. I do think they're going to get neighbors. It's just my thing.
Yeah.
I feel like they're going to do some wheeling and dealing. They're probably going to get a couple of really good opportunities in the early second, maybe trade up and get a quarterback. But I don't think that – I think they're going to go with neighbors.
I think if their quarterback isn't there, I don't think they'll force the quarterback spot, which is what I've said. I want them – and thank you, Maury, for the call. I don't think they're going to force the quarterback. And again, here's the thing about J.J. McCarthy. I mean, you can say whatever you want, and I appreciate you, Maury, and I'm sure you're a good college football fan and, you know, have a good idea of what a good quarterback is or, you know, but – If Brian Daboll tells me he loves J.J. McCarthy, I mean, I have some self-awareness. Who the hell am I? He might be wrong. He might be dead wrong. We've seen it before. But if the Giants and Joe Shane and Brian Daboll say they love J.J. McCarthy and trade up to get him, say they trade up to four, they make the trade and they take J.J. McCarthy, who the hell am I to say he's, oh my God, what a disaster. He's terrible. I understand we're supposed to have opinions around here. And I don't love him. I don't like, J.J. McCarthy would not be my choice if I were making the pick. But I'm not. Nor did I help develop Josh Allen. Nor am I hired as an NFL head coach because of my offensive scheme and my ability to develop quarterbacks. I'm not that person. I'm a Giants fan who wants things to change. Call me crazy. I'd like things to change. I know they won in Minnesota, but ultimately, like, I feel pretty crappy about the way that, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe you guys like the way the things have been going for the Giants lately. I don't know. I mean, maybe you're comfortable. Maybe you're good. Maybe because Dan Jones is a real stand-up guy. He's got some tools. He can run, and he sure did beat those Vikings. So maybe, hey, you know, I'm being silly. Maybe it's not a big deal that they don't score touchdowns. I mean, it's not that big a deal, right? I mean, maybe it's not that big a deal in the offense, even in that winning season. Did absolutely nothing. I mean, it's not that big a deal. It's not that important. I mean, it's not that it's like an outlier and they've been horrendous like every other moment of everything. Is it since he drafted, since he came a Giant, they've been like, you know, awful, worse than the NFL, lose more than everything. I mean, besides that one season where they pulled a lot of games out of the fire and, you know, won on guts and guile and Saquon Barkley running hard. I mean, and you know, getting late turnovers and playing well defensively with the scheme that Wink Martindale put together and Daboll came in and changed things fundamentally and it clicked for one season. Like, besides that, they've been like, you know, the worst team in the NFL. I don't know. I feel like I'm uncomfortable with it. And that's just me. I mean, I don't want to, you guys do you. If you're good with it, then we're good. But I'm like, you know, I'm ready for something new. I just can't take it anymore. So, like, if he believes in a quarterback, and we've seen him have the best year out of Daniel Jones, we've seen him take Tommy DeVito from a quarterback who wasn't allowed to throw the football to a quarterback who beat a hot team at the time in the Green Bay Packers and who went on to show you how good they can be in the playoffs, who developed Josh Allen into the project of the draft, into one of the best players in the NFL.
who took a little bit of a downturn when he left to be the Giants head coach, and his turnovers went up since Dable's been gone. Like, I have that guy here, right? So I might as well put him to good use. And if you think Daniel Jones and developing Daniel Jones is good use, I would be somewhat with you if he didn't freaking get hurt all the time. And if he didn't have a neck injury that's already popped its head up again. And if he didn't just blow out his knee. And if he didn't, you know, never throw touchdown passes. Like, if some of those things were different, I'd be right there with you. Unfortunately, they're all facts. So I'm ready to move on. I think the Giants are too. And I believe everything you've heard. I think they're trying to move up. Is it likely they draft a wide receiver? Yeah, because I don't know if they're going to be willing to pay the steep price that the Patriots are asking. I don't know if they're going to pay the price that Arizona will be asking. I don't know how much Minnesota is willing to give to placate Justin Jefferson and get a quarterback in there. I don't know. There's a chance they'll be there at 6, unable to move up, uncomfortable moving up, and have every quarterback they believe in already off the board. And if that's the case, they should draft a wide receiver. They shouldn't take a quarterback they don't believe in. Draft a wide receiver. I think that is a very likely outcome. But I'll tell you this. I do believe that this team and these two men, Dable and Shane, are going to do everything they can to get the quarterback they want. And we'll see if they're able to do it.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered. Derek Jeter homers to tie the game. And there it is. Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Ba-bum. All right, 4:35, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. About a half hour or so, 25 minutes or so left before we take you to the warm-up show. Let's get to your calls. 877-337-6666. Oh, I forgot. I got to tell Fleeks, there was some audio I wanted to play of P.K. Subban on awful announcing. I had it. They had a moment there with Mark Messier. It was funny. We'll get to it next. 877-337-6666. As we are getting ready for an Islanders game that hopefully they can get back into the series. UBS Arena tonight, game 3. And listen, it's one of those rare moments, unless, of course, you work at the Fan and they bring you down there and they make you put on the jersey and everything. It's one of those rare moments as a Ranger fan, you should be rooting for the Islanders. Let's go. Let's make a series of this thing. Figure out a way to hold on to a lead, would you? Golly. I'm not going to ask you to win. That's too much. The series, but you can win a game or two. Let's make it tough. All right, Fleeks, talk to the boys, will you? Get it done. Kevin and Kopog, what's up, Kev? He doesn't look in.
What's up, Chris? Hopefully the Jets and Giants are doing their due diligence for tonight, you know?
I would imagine they are. I would imagine they are doing their due diligence because it's due, and they are diligent.
So the Mets, the 3-3 West Coast swing. We'll take it. You know, we hear that.
Yeah,
we'll take it.
Well, listen, whenever when you win the first two, you'd like to do better, but yes. It's a lot better than 2-4. Yesterday's win was a good win.
Two slumping superstars went yard. Mets and Yankees still in good spots.
That is true. Listen, those are the two guys you're waiting to come around. And Lindor had a couple of good games in L.A., and then he kind of cooled off the last couple and looked bad in San Francisco, but he showed up. Yesterday, hit a couple of bombs, left-handed too, good swings. And the first one's a big home. It was a turning point of the game for me because they get – Manaea struggles in that second inning, loads the bases with nobody out, works his way out of it, does an incredible job to not give up any runs, and then Lindor hits the two-run home run right there, and you feel like, okay, now they hopefully should be able to. It was like the game was about to get out of control the other way. They figure out how to give up no runs, and then Lindor, a guy you've been waiting for, comes through with the big home run. And even in the post game, I saw that Todd Zeal made a good point about good base running from Nimmo. not getting picked off on the line drive back to the pitcher, or not getting picked off, not getting thrown out in a double play on a hard line drive right back at the pitcher, getting back to first base, lets Lindor hit. Lindor hits the 2-run home run, and they kind of relax from that point on and went on to score some runs. He hits the big home run in the ninth, an absolute bomb. So the left-handed swing's coming along. He's coming along. You can chalk up the offense in those, you know, three losses that they went ice cold against really two good pitchers out of the three games against Logan Webb and against Tyler Glasnow. And you move on. You come home against a St. Louis team and a Cub team in this homestand and hopefully, you know, get at least 4 wins, hopefully 5 wins.
And JD Martinez
will be back Friday night.
Had
a couple of, apparently his back's feeling, his lower back's feeling good. I think he got a couple of hits in the game for Syracuse last night. I saw he hit the ball at 110 miles an hour or something. So hopefully he's feeling good, ready to rejoin the team. And listen, we'll see what it brings as far as roster moves and as far as playing time. Because, you know, right now you got to play Taylor. I mean, he deserves at bats. He's been great. He's hitting over 400 with runners in scoring position. He comes through with a couple, obviously the gapper that scores a ton of runs. He gets the home run as well. Like, he's been really good. He's been a real surprise for this Met team. So you still got to find bats for him somewhere.
With Narvaez and Nito.
What about him?
I don't know, it's just not looking good. I mean,
we know Tomo. We know Nito stinks. I mean, he's not a very good hitter. And his defense is solid, but he's talked about like this brilliant defensive catcher. He's all right. I mean, he's okay. He's certainly good enough defensively to be a backup. But he has no offense. And Narvaez is okay. He's a good backup. You'd rather have him be the backup, but he's all right. But yeah, the catching position without Alvarez is going to hurt them for the next 2 months. But that's why JD Martinez coming back on Friday is important to put another right-handed bat in the middle of that lineup with the absence of Alvarez. And I think you can overcome it. And the lineup's been really good top to bottom. Hopefully, and especially if Lindor gets hot, if Nimmo ever gets going. Nimmo's been really slow. He still gets on base. He draws his walks. I wouldn't move him from the top of the order yet. Like, I know, you know, this is what everybody talks about. Same thing with the Yankees. You want to move things around. Now you got to move Judge and Soto, which makes absolutely no sense. It makes no sense to me. His best attribute is getting on base. And you want to get him on base in front of guys. You want to get him fastballs. Hey, what if you switch him and put him behind Judge? You're going to walk to get to who? Soto's going to walk no matter where you put him, right? To Sal's argument, which I do think has a little bit of merit, even though he worded it incorrectly and bothered a lot of people. I don't want Soto walking in front of Rizzo and Stanton. Let's walk him in front of Judge because he's going to walk. We know that. That's what he's going to do. It's his best attribute is getting on base. Do it in front of Judge. Judge will get hot. I'm not worried about it. And if Lindor can get going, and if Nimmo can get going, the top to bottom, 1 through 9, the lineup's been pretty good. Guys like, you know, Stewart and Taylor at the bottom of the lineup doing well. Alonso pretty much being Alonso, nothing crazy. And obviously, the right fielder coming back and playing well. Marte, sometimes, man, 4:40 in the morning, I lose the names just of and my wife just told me a study about lack of sleep and, you know, dementia. Better start sleeping. 877-337-6666. But Marte's has had a really good start to his year. And now with JD Martinez, you hopefully plug in the middle of the lineup. You wait for Alvarez to return. The starting pitching's been, you know, competent. It just hasn't gone very deep into games. You've been relying on your bullpen, which has been great. I mean, you could argue Reed is the MVP, has been the best player on the team. He's been unbelievable. He's one of the storylines in baseball. I was watching the game yesterday, the stat that Ottavino hasn't gotten to a 2-0 count. Ottavino's been a strike-throwing machine, and Diaz is still Diaz. So you've relied on the bullpen, you've relied on the offense, and the starting pitching hasn't killed you. It hasn't been beaten up. It just doesn't go deep into games. But that was a good win yesterday to come back, avoid a 4-game losing streak, avoid a losing West Coast trip, and to have Lindor hit 2 home runs and look good from the left side, that's about as good a win as the Mets could have asked for yesterday. Anthony in Roxbury. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, I disagree with you a couple things.
Sure. That's what makes the world go round. What fun would it be if you were just right all the time like I am? It would be no fun.
Brett really pushes your buttons. That guy can get you fired.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, when you start a phone call with like pretty much like this is why you're an idiot, Chris. Well, now we're that's fine. But now we're gonna go. Now we're gonna go.
You can actually have Omar talk to Brett. Maybe they get along.
That would be an interesting conversation.
That would be a great conversation. And have Stu as the referee.
Mm-hmm. Haven't heard from Stu. Stu Pod, where are you?
I know. I was waiting for Stu. I usually wait for Stu to talk to every night. Anyway, long story longer.
Yeah.
I think
you're off to a good start.
300 wins used to be a requisite to get into the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
For a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a 20-win season would be ideal.
Yes. You were looking. That was a benchmark that everybody wanted to accomplish. 20-win seasons were big.
It would take 15 years minimum to be a 300 winner.
Yeah.
20
We're never going to see it again. I don't know what your point is, but we're never going to see it again.
Here's the thing. When pitchers are bought and sold and traded and whatever, they're all, it's all about the wins. You have to have 100 wins per season to get the playoffs and stuff like that. So wins are important, but they're different value now.
Well, I mean, no. Well, you're misunderstanding. Now you're talking about team wins. Yes, winning the game is not only important, it is, it's like calling wins important is ridiculous. I'm talking about, I'm sorry, Anthony, I'm going to let you go. We're talking about wins being assigned to a particular player, some stat, like who gets the actual, who gets the win attached to their name for bookkeeping purposes. Obviously, the wins are important. I mean, yes, clearly winning the game, yes, it's paramount. I've heard that. Yes, it's true. But do I care who gets the win? I do not. Nor does Major League Baseball anymore. And 20 wins is another mark that nobody cares. Do you remember what a big deal it was? And this isn't that long ago, 2008. Remember what a big deal it was that Mike Mussina was able to get that 20-win season? For us Yankee fans, remember 2008, bad year, didn't make the playoffs. Last year at Yankee Stadium, real bummer. Bummer of a season. Wasn't anything like last year, but a bummer of a season. And Mike Mussina, on last year of his contract, we didn't know he was going to retire, but last year of his contract, and it was just, let's get him that 20-win season. He was having a great year. He gets the 20-win season. I believe his last start was at Fenway. And he gets the 20 wins. It was a big deal. Wow, yeah, Mike Mussina finally got 20 wins. No one cares. Like, do you think anyone goes through Gerrit Cole's career now, talking about just Yankees, to keep it Yankee, because that's what I do here on Yankee Hot Stove. If we're talking about Gerrit Cole and someone goes, well, is he a Hall of Famer? Well, let's look at his stats. Never had a 20-win season. No one's going to care anymore. No one's going to care. No one's going to look at that. No one's going to care. Because wins, you just don't get them the same anymore. The bullpens are too important. You go to the bullpen too much. No one cares about wins. He's still capable of getting a 20-win season. Obviously not this year. But he's still capable because he goes so deep. He's one of the few guys who could get a 20-win season, but no one cares. It's a outdated stat to give, and I think it needs to change if we're going to care. If us as a fans, no one cares inside baseball. Nobody's going into an arbitration case. Nobody's going into a negotiation for a contract. Nobody's going in there saying, hey, he won 11 games last year. League average was 7. Like, no one cares. You're gonna talk about quality starts. You're going to talk about ERA. You're going to talk about strikeouts per 9. You're going to talk about velocity. You're going to talk about innings pitched. You're going to talk about a million different things. Wins are going to be the 35th thing you bring up. But we seem to care because I'm tired of the moaning and groaning every time a manager comes in and takes out a pitcher in the 5th inning. Oh, he's one more out away from the star. Oh, he seems unhappy. Oh, why would you do that? Oh, he was this right close to a win. You took a win away from Luis Gil. Whoa. No one... The managers don't care. The players ultimately shouldn't care, and they might in the moment. They won't care otherwise. And it's just an outdated stat. But if we still feel for it, then the pitcher should be open to get a win, even if he's short five innings. Leave it completely up to the scorer. If a guy goes 4 innings, shutout innings, and nobody else comes near getting that many outs, and nobody pitches well, why is he unable to get a win? Just throw him in the mix to get a win. Who cares? That's enough of that conversation. Rocco in Saratoga, what's up, Rocco?
How you doing, C-Max?
How you doing?
Totally. I'm doing great, as usual. You know that. The Rock, you know.
What's
the
up?
Rock is the Rock.
The Rock is The Rock. Hey. Real quick, I forgot to take a break. Instead, I went to you, so let's go. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll rush it in. You're absolutely right. You remember King Felix won the Cy Young with 12 victories. He only had 12
wins.
That's
it. No one cares.
He won the Cy.
No one looks at it. Cy Young. Nobody.
That's right.
I was looking at Blake Snell. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Rocco. I did you dirty this week. Call today. Call back tomorrow. 14-9. No one cares. That's the last thing. You go to ERA. You go to strikeout per nine, hit per nine, all that. No one cares about wins. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. Rapid fire style phone calls as we take you to 5 o'clock. What do you do? Do you think I'm a dope? Do you draft a wide receiver? Do you trade up for a quarterback? Jets, what do you do? Do you care that tight ends typically have failed at the top of the draft? And, oh, look at what Kyle Pitts has done in Atlanta, and you can get Kelsey in the third round, and I'd be afraid. He's not a pillar-type position. I don't care. I'm getting a weapon. We got the Knicks tonight. We got Islanders tonight. We got the draft tonight. What a night!
World Series over!
This happened. You talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:54, McMonagle here with you on this busy Thursday morning, what will be an even more busy Thursday night. We got playoff games, we got NFL draft, it's finally here. What will they do? What will they do? You tell me. 877-337-6666, you know what I think. You know what I think, but the Giants will probably take a wide receiver and hopefully he'll be good because they weren't able to trade up. Their guy is gone and I'll be disappointed. But hey, we can live with disappointment, just not from our Knicks, right, Gary?
Hey, what's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, I never call. I just want to say real quick that sure. I work overnight at Amazon. I listen to you every single night. I look forward to you coming on. So you're really, you're great, man.
Well,
so
thank
you. I just want to let you know that.
I appreciate that. And if you work for Amazon, there's a good chance you've been to my house at some point over the last few years because it never ends.
Well,
it's every day. Every time I walk out of my door, I trip over a box. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter when.
Yeah. And my quick Nick point is, you know, and I'm listening to Sal and Brandon, and everyone is concerned. It seems like Nick fans are concerned now, like that we're scraping by a 2-7 series, and now they're talking. Well, I think the Knicks now there's a ceiling. I don't know how far. No. Listen, really, yeah, if you want to be concerned about Brunson, right, I want to see Brunson play better.
Yeah.
But let me just listen to this. Without Embiid this year, the Sixers were 16-27. That means with Embiid, they were 31-8.
Yes.
This isn't a 2-7 matchup. This is a 3-2 seed. This is a – if the Sixers, the Sixers are just – with Embiid, the Sixers are just as good as the Celtics. And that's why I don't care how we have to scrape by this series.
Yeah.
There's no ceiling. We could still go as far as we can go.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't disagree with you. I'm on some level. As far as the seating, you're right. This is, and that's what we talked about. And thank you for the call, Gary, and thank you for the compliments. Enjoy yourself. Be safe out there. Yeah, as Boston, you mentioned, as good as Boston, as Boston gets beat up by Miami and that Heat culture. Without Butler, that's a tough loss. I still expect them to win that series, but hey, anything is possible, right? Everyone's going to be, I'm not afraid of Boston. They can't beat Miami. But I agree. This is why we talked about the matchup and winning that game against Chicago the last day of the year, and we knew the danger that this Philadelphia team was. And I think the point of anyone who's pessimistic on some level, which I don't know how you're too pessimistic, off of those two wins, and especially game two, I mean, you got to be riding high. There's just no other way to look at it other than Brunson needs to be better and that you could have lost both of the games, certainly game two. And Embiid, you're right, they've been great with him. Even since coming back from injury, and they were on a 9-game winning streak heading into this series, he still doesn't, as great as he's been, he scored 33 points and he's been pretty good offensively. And I thought to start game one, he looked really good. He still hobbled a little bit. He's still unable to move the way you expect him to move. And it's not quite a healthy Philadelphia, but still, you're right. They're a damn good team. This isn't some typical 2-7 series. That's why a lot of Knicks fans wanted to avoid it, or at least considered it at the end of that Bulls game where it was close. But I don't think there's any doubt. As happy as we are, and I'm thrilled, and the idea they're winning without Brunson, I'm still viewing as a positive. And that the role players have stepped up and that they've finished these games, and I think they're mentally tougher than Philadelphia. Excuse me. That they're mentally tougher than Philadelphia, especially at the end of the game. And I saw Marash said this, and I completely agree. I said it since I saw it. The guarantee seems weak when you can't even lift your head up to say it. Like the body language of the guarantee seems, it just, all of it. From the complaining, from the coach with the timeouts, to Embiid with the fouls, to the guarantee, it all seems weak. And I just think the Knicks are mentally tougher. The Knicks have more good players. The Knicks have more shooters. The Knicks have better role players. The Knicks are a better overall team. But having said that, I think it's fair to say the NBA is built on stars. And stars typically win these series, typically. And right now, the two best players in this series by a mile have been Embiid and Maxey. And Brunson has got to get in the arena. He's got to be in that conversation, and he hasn't been for the first two games. And role players play better at home. So the Knicks role players will probably struggle a little bit on the road, and you can expect more from Harris and Batum and guys like that for Philadelphia. They're going to have to play better than they played in the first two games. But the main point is, I certainly think they can, and I expect them to. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Fleegs on the other side, always appreciate you. We got a big night. Enjoy. Let's go, Islanders. Let's go, Knicks. And then, of course, the NFL draft. We'll have plenty of reaction. I'm on tomorrow at 2 a.m. Hopefully, I'm reacting to the Giants drafting a quarterback and the Jets taking an offensive weapon. But who knows? Anything is possible. I'll see you then. We'll break it down. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. The warm-up show is next. I'm out of here. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.